Adya Sarva Lokaika Drik Prada Sava Bhagavata Prana Srimad Bhagavata Prabho Kali Dvantodita Ditya Sri Krishna Parivartita Paramananda Pataya Prema Varshaksharayate Sarvada Savasevyaya Sri Krishnaya Namostume Madekabando Madsangin Madguru Manmahadhana Manistarka Madbhagya Madananda Namostute Asadu Sadu Tadayin Atini Chochatakara Hana Munchakara Chinmam Premna Hritkantayospura Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 5, Text 23. Na brahmanais tulaye putam hanyat Pasyami vipra kimata param tu Yasmin ribi prahutam shraddayaham Ashnami kamam natatagni hotre Na brahmanais tulaye bhutamanyat Pashyami vipra kimatah param tu Yasmin ribi prahutam shraddayaham Ashnami kamam natatagni hotre Vaishnavas. With the Brahmanas, Tulaye, I count as equal. Bhutam, entity. Anyat, other. Pashyami, I can see. Vipraha, O assembled Brahmanas. Kim, anything. Ataha, to the Brahmanas. Param, superior. To, certainly. Yasmin, through whom? Nribihi, by people. Prahutam, food offered. After ritualistic ceremonies are properly performed. Shraddhaya, with faith and love. Aham, I. Ashnami, eat. Kamam, with full satisfaction. Na, not. Tata, in that way. Agnihotre, in the fire sacrifice. Translation. O respectful Brahmanas, as far as I am concerned, no one is equal or superior to the Brahmanas in this world. I do not find anyone comparable to them. When people know my motive, after performing rituals according to the Vedic principles, they offer food to me with faith and love through the mouth of a Brahmana. When food is thus offered unto me, I eat it with full satisfaction. Indeed, I derive more pleasure from food offered in that way than from the food offered in the sacrificial fire. Purport. According to the Vedic system, after the sacrificial ceremony, the Brahmanas are invited to eat the remnants of the offered food. When the Brahmanas eat the food, it is to be considered directly eaten by the Supreme Lord. Thus, no one can be compared to qualified Brahmanas. The perfection of evolution is to be situated on the Brahminical platform. Any civilization not based on Brahminical culture or guided by Brahmanas is based on sense gratification. It's certainly a condemned civilization. Presently, human civilization is based on sense gratification. And consequently, more and more people are becoming addicted to different types of things. No one respects Brahminical culture. Demoniac civilization is attached to Ugra Karma, horrible activities, and big industries are created to satisfy unfathomable lusty desires. Consequently, the people are greatly harassed by governmental taxation. The people are irreligious and do not perform the sacrifices recommended in the Bhagavad Gita. Yagyad bhavati parjanya. By the performance of sacrifice, clouds form and rain falls. Due to sufficient rainfall, there is sufficient production of food. Guided by the Brahmanas, society should follow the principles of Bhagavad Gita. Then people will become very happy. Anad bhavanti bhutani. When animals and man are sufficiently fed with grains, they become stronger. Their hearts become tranquil and their brains peaceful. They can then advance in spiritual life, life's ultimate destination. Om Agyanati Mirantasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So we saw in yesterday's class by Hari Ram Prabhu that there was a big build-up to the worshipfulness of the Brahmanas. It started a whole gradation from the material elements, and then better than them was the plants, better than them was slithering creatures like snakes and worms, and then above them creatures that have some more developed intelligence, and then above them was the humans, and above them was different kinds of ghostly living entities. So that's going from Bhuloka to Bhuvaloka, and other residents of Bhuvaloka like the Gandharvas and the Siddhas. And then it goes up to it includes also the Asuras. The Asuras are better than the Gandharvas and the Siddhas, and better than the Asuras are the Devas. So now you're in Swargaloka. And then the best of them is Indra. but better than Indra is Brahma's sons, and the best out of all of Brahma's sons is Lord Shiva. And greater than Lord Shiva is Lord Brahma, because Brahma is the father of Lord Shiva. And Krishna says, that Brahma, he happens to be a devotee of mine. Samatparo. And Krishna says about himself, Aham Dvija Deva Devaha. We may wonder why the word Deva is used twice there. So the Brahmanas are themselves the Dvija Devas. They are the best among the twice born. There's all kinds of things which are twice born, right? Even among human society, the Vaishyas and the Kshatriyas and the Brahmanas are all considered Dvijas, twice born. They all get initiation and so on. But in general, there's many other things which are twice born too, right? The birds. Birds are twice born because they take birth. First an egg pops out and then a bird pops out of an egg, so they kind of take birth twice. Teeth are twice born. Teeth, you get your your baby teeth and your adult teeth. They're also called twice born Dvijas. Other things also are twice born, like the moon, for example, is twice born. It appears one time as it's born as the son of Soma, is the son of who in the Bhagavatam, but he again later appears from the milk ocean. So there's a whole group of things which are twice born, and out of all of those things which are twice born, the Brahmanas are the Devas. They're the lords of the twice born, the best of the twice born, in other words. And Krishna says, I'm Dvija Deva Deva. In Sanskrit, there's often an ambiguity which is played upon by poets. It's you may know the name Rameshwaram, right? In South India, the famous pilgrimage place, Rameshwaram. So it's a Shiva Linga, right? We know that in the Ramayana, Lord Shiva was worshipped by Lord Ram before he crossed the ocean. So different people have different concepts of what the name Rameshwara means, and it's relevant to this Dvija Deva Deva discussion, because you can take it in two main ways, and a third way possibly too. It's a kind of a compound. You can take it that this Lord Shiva here in Rameshwaram, he is the Ishvara of Ram, he's the Lord of Ram. So the Shaktas, the followers of Lord Shiva, they think, yes, this is the meaning. But then there's another kind of way of analyzing a samasa, a compound word like Rama Ishvara, Rameshwara, right? In Sanskrit, and that's called a Bahuvrihi analysis. So one whose Ishvara is Ram, one whose Lord is Ram. So this Lord Shiva is one whose Lord is Ram. So Lord Shiva's Lord is Ram. So then the Vaishnavas like that interpretation. And then they went to ask different persons what was the meaning of it. So what's the meaning of Rameshwara? They went and asked Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva gave that explanation, that Bahuri explanation. Lord Shiva said, Rameshwara means me, whose Lord is Ram. You know, Ram is my Lord. And they went to Lord Vishnu, and he, in his humility, said, he is the Lord of Ram. Lord Shiva is my worshipful deity. So Lord Vishnu, he likes to worship Lord Shiva. We see that even in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes also. So, and Lord Brahma finally was approached, and he said, well, it could be a Dwandva compound. It could be Rama and Ishvara. You know, Lord Rama and Lord Shiva are there together in that place, so that kind of, you know, pacified both the parties. So like that, Dvija Deva Devaha can be analyzed in these two ways. Really, Krishna's intention in saying that is, Krishna's saying, for me, the Brahmanas are my Devas. That's what he's saying. But other people may not tolerate, they may not tolerate that. They may say, oh, that Krishna's saying, I am the Lord of these Brahmanas, right? But Krishna is actually saying, I am one whose Lord is the Brahmanas. So for me, the Brahmanas are my Lord. And we see this corroborated elsewhere in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the third canto, when the Kumaras come to Vaikuntha and they're stopped at the very last of the seven gates by Jayan Vijay. And then they become quite upset, as we know, and Lord Vishnu comes out to mediate the situation. It's the first conflict resolution in the Bhagavatam. So he comes and he speaks very great words of glorification of the Brahmanas in general, and it almost seems like ati stuti, like overpraise. But he's establishing the position of the Brahmanas, and he jokingly says actually that the reason why I got my position as the Supreme Lord and why the Goddess of Fortune chose to marry me is because I worship the Brahmanas. That's what he tells the Kumaras. He says, I'm the Supreme Lord. I got to be the Supreme Lord because I worship the Brahmanas. That's what he's jokingly telling to the Kumaras. So then he says, if I find that even one of my own limbs is acting in a way that is contrary to the welfare of the Brahmanas, I will not hesitate to cut off my own limb. He says that to the Kumaras in the Bhagavatam. And that's actually proven later on. It's proven in the pastime of Bhaumasura. We know Bhaumasura, right? Bhauma. What does this name Bhauma mean? It means he's the son of Bhumi. Bhauma means son of Bhumi. When Varaha lifted up the earth planet from the bottom of the universe, then by the touch of Varaha Dev, the earth planet became impregnated by Varaha's transcendental touch, and she bore a son who was called Bhauma, son of Bhumi. And that son actually started off as a good boy. He was religious, but he fell into bad association of Banasura. And by Banasura's association, he became also demoniac in his quality, and he started giving trouble to the Brahmanas. And he started giving trouble to the Vaishnavas and to the people in general. He became a demon. So Krishna actually ended up having to kill him, but who was he killing? He was killing his own son. Bhaumasura was actually Krishna's own son from Varaha and Bhumi. So this is how he demonstrates, like a son, actually, that the father is reborn in the form of the son, as we know, right? The son is like a limb or an extension of the father's body. So when he says to the Kumaras in the third canto, I won't hesitate even to cut off my own limb if it's found to be giving trouble to the Brahmanas. He actually proves that when he actually kills his own son, Bhaumasura, who is actually giving trouble to the Brahmanas and to the people in general. So we know that Krishna is known, Namo Pramanya Devaya Go Brahmana Hitayacha. He's known for his devotion to the Brahmanas. He's very unabashed in describing. Krishna is not greedy actually for his own, you know, high status. He always puts himself under his devotees and under the learned Brahmanas. It's quite an amazing quality of Krishna's. He's very humble. So we see here in this verse that Krishna is telling Jai Shri Shri Gauri Jai Shri Shri Krishna Balaram Shri Shri Radha Shyam Sundara Lady Devashaka Ki Jai. So we see in this verse that Lord Rishabhadev is telling to his sons, he's taking great effort to hammer in this point over many verses. And he tells them that I actually prefer eating through the mouths of the Brahmanas more than I prefer eating through the Agnihotra fire. The fire, when you do a fire yoga, the fire is considered the tongue of the Lord, right? And you offer the ghee, you offer the grains, and the Lord eats them in his form. You know, Agni passes on those oblations to the Lord, so on, is the vehicle. So, but he says, I actually prefer eating through the mouths of the Brahmanas. And it's so important. We see in Gaura Lila, when Advaita Acharya did this Shraddha ceremony, and then he was very careful to choose the most elevated person in that assembly, and he chose Haridas Thakur. Haridas Thakur, in one sense, he wasn't a Brahmana by birth, but by qualities, he was by far the most excellent Brahmana in that assembly. And everybody actually unanimously agreed, just because of Haridas's, you know, explicit saintly qualities and his, you know, his well-known devotion to the Lord. So, you know, this is also how we see who is a Brahmana, by their qualities, by their learning, by their devotion. So there's different kinds of Brahmanas. Even among the Brahmanas, there's different kinds. And there's you may be aware of one famous purport in the second canto where Prabhupada talks about the effect of giving charity. Or this verse talks about feeding the Brahmanas, right? Krishna likes eating through the mouths of the Brahmanas. So that's like giving food, cooking for the Brahmanas. So there's different kinds of Brahmanas. And Prabhupada in the second canto in a purport talks about the effects of giving charity to different levels of Brahmanas. There's a different reward. So we can have a quick look at that. Prabhupada is actually quoting, he calls it the Smriti. It's actually coming from Manu Smriti. So Prabhupada says, money given in charity to a suitable person is guaranteed bank balance in the next life. Such charity is recommended to be given to a Brahmana. If the money is given in charity to a non-Brahmana, somebody who doesn't have brahminical qualification, the money is returned in the next life in the same proportion. So charity in general to a normal person, you get back the same amount. But then he says, if it is given in charity to a half-educated Brahmana, even then the money is returned double. If the money is given in charity to a learned and fully qualified Brahmana, the money is returned 100 and 1,000 times. And if the money is given to a Veda Paraga, one who has factually realized the path of the Vedas, it is returned by unlimited multiplication. The ultimate end of Vedic knowledge is realization of the Supreme Personality Godhead, Lord Krishna, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Vedaish Tasavaya Ahameva Vedya. There is guarantee of money is being returned if given in charity, regardless of the proportion. Similarly, a moment passed in the association of a pure devotee by hearing and chanting the transcendental messages of the Lord is a perfect guarantee for eternal life, for returning home back to Godhead. So, how many of you know this passage? Yeah, okay, a few devotees. So this term is used here, Veda Paraga. Para means the, when you have an ocean, and or you have a very broad river. Say you're at Mayapur and you're standing on the Ganga, yeah? And then you look over to the other side of the Ganga, there's the opposite shore of the Ganga. That's the para. So paraga, one who has crossed over and gone to the opposite shore, is called a paraga. So the Vedas are like an ocean. They're vast, they're huge. So this Veda paraga means somebody who studied the Vedas and all the Vedangas too, all the six Vedangas. Somebody who has studied all of those and, as Prabhupada points out, has realized the conclusion of them, that it's actually Krishna is the conclusion of, you should worship Krishna, that's actually the conclusion of the Vedas. One who has in that way crossed over to the far side of the ocean, that is the Vedas. If you give charity, if you feed such a person, give charity to such a person, there's unlimited multiplication, or unlimited return based on that investment, if you like. So, and Prabhupada actually ends this by talking about hearing and chanting the association of a pure devotee, that giving your ears in charity, then you'll be rewarded by an eternal reward, which is going back home, back to Godhead. So this actually comes, all of this comes from the Manu Samhita, and the Manu Samhita has a verse which is practically quite similar to this today's verse. It talks about eating, the Lord eating through the mouth of the Brahmanas. So the Manu Samhita, talking about the duties of kings, says about kings, let him honor those Brahmanas who have returned from their teacher's house after studying the Veda. For that money which is given to Brahmanas is declared to be an imperishable treasure for kings. The offering made through the mouth of a Brahmana which is neither spilt, nor falls on the ground, nor ever perishes, is far more excellent than Agnihotras. So to feed a Brahmin is actually more pious than even to do a fire sacrifice. But he specifies that you shouldn't spill the food on the ground, and so on. All right, and he talks about, he says, a gift to one who is not a Brahmana yields an ordinary reward. A gift to one who calls himself a Brahmana by birth, a double reward. A gift to a well-read Brahmana, 100,000-fold reward. And a gift to one who knows the Veda and the Vedangas, a reward that is without end. That's actually what Prabhupada's paraphrasing here, this Manusamhita passage. And then he says, for according to the particular qualities of the recipient and according to the faith of the giver, a small or a great reward will be obtained for a gift in the next world. Okay, this sounds like some charity. That's there. But we can take away some interesting points. This, when you're giving charity, you have to see the qualities of the recipient and the faith of the giver. That's also an important point. The person who's giving also has to have faith in that person that they're giving to. That's also part of the equation. And there's a nice thing, because there's different kinds of charity that can be given. There's grains and wealth and cows and food, money, and so on. All kinds of different charity that can be given. But actually, the Shastras explain that vidya dan, giving knowledge in charity, is actually the highest form of charity. And it's actually, vidya is the highest form of wealth. There's a very nice shloka that explains this. It contrasts knowledge to other kinds of wealth. That knowledge, it cannot be taxed by the government or by the king. Yeah? It's like any other kind of wealth you have, they can tax it, right? Part of it will be taken in income tax or whatever. But knowledge is a wealth that cannot be taxed by the government or the king. Nabharakari, it doesn't create a burden, it doesn't have any heavy weight to it. Like some wealth, you have some treasure chest of gold or something, it's heavy. If you have a cow, wealth in the form of cows, they're very heavy. If you have any, even food, pots of granaries, you know, supplies of food, sacks of grains, they're also very heavy. Normal wealth is heavy, right? But knowledge is not heavy. And he says, Nachoraharyam, normal wealth can be stolen by thieves, but knowledge cannot be stolen by thieves. And he says, Nacha Bhartri Bhajam, normal wealth may have to be split up among the brothers. If there's an inheritance, for example, you may have to split it up among your brothers or your siblings, right? But knowledge does not have to be split up among the brothers. And then the most amazing thing, the more you about knowledge is the more that you give, the more it increases. With normal wealth, the more you give out, then all your wealth will gradually go. But with knowledge, the more you give out, the more you teach, then the more actually realization, the more the knowledge increases. So in this way, knowledge is ascertained to be the highest form of wealth. So that establishes some of the glories of jnana. But what is, even in jnana, there's different kinds of jnana, but knowledge about Krishna, that's the highest kind of knowledge. If you give that in charity, that's the highest kind of charity. Krishna himself says this in the Bhagavad Gita. He says, right at the end, in the 18th chapter, in verse 68, Yaidam paramam guhyam madbhaktesha vidasyati bhaktim mayi param kritva mamei vaishyatya sangshaya. For one who explains the supreme secret to the devotees, pure devotional service is guaranteed, and at the end, he will come back to me. Nacha tasman manushyeshu kaschin me priyakrittamaha bhavita nacha me tasmat anya priyataro bhuvi. There is no servant in this world more dear to me than he, nor will there ever be one more dear. So Krishna, at the conclusion of the Bhagavad Gita, he says, one who explains Bhagavad Gita, which is this knowledge about me, one who gives this in charity by explaining it to others, he is actually the most dear to me. There'll never be anybody more dear to me, Krishna says. We know in general, earlier in the Bhagavad Gita, there's four different kinds of people that approach Krishna, right? Artharti, etc. So out of them, Krishna declares the jnani to be the best and the most dear to him, because they're approaching Krishna with some conception, not to get something, but because they generally know about some of his glories, and therefore they're approaching him. So in this way, knowledge is the highest kind of charity. And we'll finish on one point mentioned in the purport by Srila Prabhupada. Is towards the end of the purport, Prabhupada talks about the effects of religion. That when you do religion, yajna bhavati parajanya, by the performance of sacrifice, clouds form and rains fall. Due to sufficient rainfall, there is sufficient production of food. Guided by the Brahmana, society should follow the principles of Bhagavad Gita. Then people will become very happy. Anad pavanti bhutani. When animals and man are sufficiently fed with grains, they become stronger. Their hearts become tranquil and their brains peaceful. They can then advance in spiritual life, life's ultimate destination. So we're seeing here the effect, and he explains that the current civilization is basically not based on Brahminical culture, it's based on artha and karma, basically. It's not based on dharma or any idea of moksha, or what to speak of bhakti. But it's based on artha and karma, just getting some wealth and then enjoying the senses with that wealth. Yeah, and that's the basis. There's no respect for the Vedic civilization or these kind of yajnas. So we see the result of that. Prabhupada's quoting the famous verse of Bhagavad Gita, from yajna comes rain. Now you may say, oh, we still see rain. It's not too bad. It's Kali Yuga's going on. We still, you know, just last night there was a bit of a rain, right? Of course that was here in Vrindavan. But, but around the world we see some rain. So you may think, well, even though yajna is not going on, still the rain's falling enough. But actually, those people who keep tabs on the resources of the world know that the next scarcity is in water. It's already manifesting. Water is actually becoming a endangered resource, or a resource that's in danger of, you know, not being enough. It'll be in scarcity. So the multinational companies in the world that have a long-term vision are already buying up all the reserves of water from different governments. They're already buying up everything to have control, because they know now it's about petrol. In 10 or 20 years, it's going to be all about water. The next wars are all going to be over water. You know, now there's so many wars, right? You know, a certain big country that we know pretends to be protecting the world, when in fact it's just going in and plundering the petrol on some pretext, right? And everybody knows it, and still they get away with it. So that's just how it is, right? Kali Yuga. But the next thing will be water. So we may think, oh, the rain's still there, but how much clean water is there on this planet? There's not actually so many reserves of it left. We see even the holy rivers is such a tragedy. It's so the water is becoming something that's going to be more and more in scarcity. And what comes after the parjanya, after the clouds and the rainfall? You get anna. You get grains. So grains come from seeds, right? So here also we have another effect of Kali Yuga coming in. We have the seeds being modified in so many ways. Anyway, we won't get into so many side topics, but as you know, the seeds are all kind of, again, becoming corrupted in Kali Yuga, because the pure original strains are being replaced by GMO strains, which are made by one or two multinational corporations who literally try and have a monopoly over the seeds. It's actually very demoniac. They want to have full control over the food supply. And any farmers that use natural homegrown seeds that have come down through generations of farmers, they try and pressure those farmers and weed them out, and if they don't use these seeds. And now they've actually made seeds where you no longer need a pesticide for the fruits and the vegetables that grow from those seeds. The seed itself contains the poison to kill the bugs. So if you grow a tomato from some certain of these new seeds, then tomato will grow and it'll look, you know, nice and plastic and big and red, and of course there's no rust there, but it'll look good. And if a bug comes to try and bite that tomato, the bug itself will die, because the fruit, the tomato fruit, is itself a poison. The pesticide is inherent in the seed now. They no longer use pesticides. The fruit itself is the pesticide, is the poison. So, you know, Prabhupada's talking here about when there's anna, when animals and men are sufficiently fed with grains, they become stronger, their hearts become tranquil, and their brains peaceful. You can hardly expect those results from such kinds of seeds. So this is, you know, it's already going on. It's very pernicious how it's going on. It's almost not seen, but it's, you know, we're just kind of blindly, you know, forced to be a part of all of this. So that is, you know, that's why Brahminical advice is so important in the government, as Prabhupada stresses again and again, because then there'll be religious performances, there'll be proper rainfall, there won't be vicious ugra karma, as Prabhupada talks about here, that has no regard for protecting the resources in terms of water and seeds and so on. So actually the Brahminical life ensures a much better physical and mental status for everybody on the planet than this other ugra karma civilization. So it's, as usual, Prabhupada's hitting the nail right on the head here. So we'll end here. If anybody has any questions or comments, yes, Shri Krishna Prabhupada.